The honorable choice. Pairing, Dean Winchester Times OFC. Summary, June 1872. Captain Dean Winchester of the U.S. Cavalry is tasked with one job. Break a wild Mustang. He just didn't expect the woman who infiltrates his camp, intent on freeing her tribe's horse. Author's note. Getting to know you. Getting to know all about you. If you've seen The King and I, then you'll probably be singing that line in your head like I do. Disclaimer. I got inspired after a recent rewatch of Spirit, The Stallion of the Cimarron. Literally a perfect movie. As well as having Yellowstone in the back of my brain. I've done extensive research for this one, both on the American Indian Lakota tribe and on American history during this time in the late 1800s, also known as the Old West, during the American Indian Wars and the Sioux Wars. Of course, one of my main goals is to avoid inaccuracies, both historical and cultural. Jackals vs. Bingo 24 prompt, Western AU. Song inspo, The Spirit soundtrack. Word count, 3.1K. Tags, warnings, angst, protective dean, historical tidbits, fluff. Part 2, Death and Sacrifice. Dean falls out of his saddle with a yell, landing hard in the grass. The impact knocks the air out of his chest and the hat off his head, not to mention the pain that rattles down his back.
Son of a bitch.
He wheezes while trying to get back up. The woman jumps down from the Mustang's back and all but leaps on Dean. Straddling his waist and grabbing a fistful of his collar, she lets out a battle cry and raises a small knife at him. It's probably no more than 2 inches long. Dean may be on the ground with a smarting forehead, but he's still got the upper hand. He grabs her knife-wielding arm and whips out his pistol from his belt. Her eyes widen, and she stills above him. The gun lies between them, aimed for her chest. They're both breathing hard. Dean has a problem. Looking into her eyes, soulful and brown, the slope of her nose and her full lips parted with shock. He just can't do it. His finger eases off the trigger of his gun and he lowers it to the ground beside him.
I told you.
He says,
I'm not gonna hurt you.
Her head tilts as she stares at his gun. Then at him. She relaxes somewhat, and she backs off of him, sliding from his lap down to the grass beside him. Her closed fist with the knife comes to rest at her side. She gives him a look of wary bewilderment.
You are a strange man,
she says. Dean has to laugh a little, smiling at her afterward.
I guess so.
He replies. Her brows furrow.
You killed one of your own.
For me? He nods, and his smile falls with a weary sigh. The hard part about that is he doesn't feel much guilt about what he's done. At the same time, he does, and the conflict churns in his stomach. He knew what kind of man Roman was. He was the kind of soldier that could have filled Colonel Sanderson's shoes one day. A fellow soldier under Dean's command, and a sack of shit in human clothes. Dean leans back on his hands in the grass and slides his legs out long. His stare falls to the earth between his boots. The ground is soft underneath him. Maybe it rained this morning.
Yeah, that's gonna make it tough when I go back,
he says.
At best, that's a court-martial. At worst,
the Lakota woman frowns, her dark brows nearly meeting in the middle as she considers him. He wonders what she sees when she looks at him.
Tell you what,
Dean says.
Give yourself and your horse a rest tonight. I'll go back and tell them I lost you in the canyon.
Her eyes widen further in surprise. He can't blame her for it. He's surprising himself every time he opens his mouth.
Will they kill you? She asks.
Dean shrugs.
Nah, I'll be fine.
She levels him with a firmer look, one that demands the truth. His nonchalance wanes, and he sighs.
They might, he says. She shakes her head. She seems to deliberate over something, but eventually she comes to a decision. Just when she opens her mouth to speak, a gunshot rings out and hits the ground not far from their feet. A warning. The sound of hooves thundering on the earth reached them before they look up. Two horses gallop towards them in the distance, their riders wearing blue uniforms. They both tense up, but Dean is the first one to move. He grabs her arm and helps her stand along with him. They scramble back and lead the horses by their reins further into the trees. They find a denser patch and a raised hill to crouch down and hide behind. The Mustang is too tired to go very far, but Baby is already making anxious sounds, protective of her rider. "Shh," Dean whispers and runs a soothing hand over her side. He leads her to lay down with her legs tucked underneath her. The Lakota manages to do the same with the Mustang after whispering to him softly in her language. There's a trust between them, Dean realizes. They have a connection that seems to mirror his own with his horse. He doesn't know how he didn't see it before.
"Captain,"
Benny calls out. Dean grimaces, but he stays quiet. He turns to the woman and holds a finger over his lips. She stares back at him in apprehension. He begins to creep slowly around the hill, but she grabs onto his wrist. For a second, she looks just as surprised as him by the reflexive action. Then, she shakes her head at him. "Don't go out there," her eyes say. Dean smiles and he gives her a reassuring wink. He gently removes her hand and gestures at her to stay where she is. He army crawls up the side of the hill. It gives him a vantage point to watch his men, who approach just a few feet down below.
"Captain Winchester,"
Cass calls next.
"We don't want to have to come and get you, Dean. Come on,"
Benny says. He does sound reluctant for his part. His voice grows more somber when he says,
"Colonel's given us orders to bring you and the girl back, dead or alive."
Dean knows the position he's put his own men in. He doesn't blame them for following the Colonel's orders. He just hopes they can forgive him for what he's about to do. He leaps off the edge of the hill with a yell and brings Benny with him to the ground. He sweeps Cass's legs out from underneath him, then tosses a punch that lands on the corner of Benny's chin. He kicks Benny's gun away and wrestles Cass until his pistol falls from his hand. The three men scrap and trade blows until Dean is the only one left standing. His men are groaning on the dusty ground, slowly picking themselves up. Dean's heaving for breath as well as he leans back against the side of the hill. Despite that momentary victory, he knows what they all know, that this fight isn't going to end until either they're dead or he's dead.
"Where's the girl, Dean?"
Benny says. He implores him to see sense.
"We take her back with us, we can smooth all this over with the Colonel. All of it. Even Roman."
Dean lets out a deep breath, but he shakes his head.
"Can't do that, Benny,"
he says.
"I'm sorry."
There's a question circling in his friend's eyes, but after a beat, Benny seems to know the answer to it. He picks up his gun from the ground. Just like Dean once did, the lieutenant now has a choice to make. He shares a heavy look with Cass. The two of them nod before they focus back on Dean. Benny's hand falls, and he stows his gun.
"You died today,"
Benny says.
"We found your body somewhere in the canyon. Your horse, too."
Dean nods with something of a smile. He supposes faking his death is the only option now. He rips the badge off his uniform jacket and tosses it to Benny.
"There's your proof,"
he says. Dean shares a grim nod of respect with Cass while Benny examines the torn patch denoting a captain's rank.
"Take care of each other,"
Dean says. Benny's head raises and he meets Dean with a somber gaze.
"Goodbye, brother."
Dean doesn't return to her until the men are out of sight through the trees. She's still hiding along with the resting horses, waiting for him. That alone surprises him.
It would bring a small smile to his face if the weight of that goodbye didn't feel so heavy on his shoulders. He reaches out a hand for her. It takes her a moment to consider it, but she accepts his offer. He helps her to her feet, after which she quickly pulls her hand back. She's wary of his touch, her face guarded when she looks up at him. Dean supposes he can't blame her, even if it does strike a nerve. After what he just did for her, his face becomes stoic, and he turns away to grab his hat from the dusty ground.
We should probably head out.
She nods and calls to her horse to encourage him to his feet. Despite himself, Dean can't help but be curious. How did this girl manage to tame that wild beast?
Does he have a name?
He asks. Mato, she replies.
Mato, Dean echoes. Does that mean something? You know, in your language?
She eyes him wryly, brushing her hand over Mato's hide. It means angry, like a bear, she says. Dean snorts.
Yeah, good name.
He remembers his bruised side and ego from when the Mustang threw him off his back. Dean watches her with another realization as she gracefully mounts the horse. Baby has gotten up to her feet as well, already nudging the back of his arm with her snout. He rubs her nose in affection. Then he turns to climb up onto her back, settling his feet into the stirrups and loosely grabbing the reins. He follows his companion's lead farther into the forest, but he guides his horse to fall into step beside hers.
Will you tell me your name now?
He asks.
Think we've been through enough together at this point, don't you think?
She considers it with a tilt of her head. She looks over at him with a small smile. Kimmy Mila, she says. The syllables roll off her tongue effortlessly. Dean raises his brows.
Kimila?
She shakes her head at him, her lips pursing. Kimmy Mila. Lord help him, but he tries his best. His brows furrow.
Kimila?
He attempts. She guides Mato closer and grabs Dean by his cheeks with one hand. Kimmy.
Kimmy.
He repeats with his cheeks squished. His face is starting to warm up, and not altogether an embarrassment. Mila, she says with a nod.
Mila, Dean says. Kimmy Mila.
He's treated to her smile, warm and true. She releases him, her gaze flitting over his face. Then she keeps riding. Dean grins to himself.
Think I'm gonna call you Mila,
he says.
Make it easier on myself.
She even laughs, a honeyed sound. Yes, my father does too.
What does it mean? Your name?
In your language? She says, in a tone that teases him back. She becomes thoughtful as she searches for the word. It means butterfly.
Really?
Dean remarks. She doesn't strike him as a butterfly.
More like a lioness,
he thinks, only somewhat holding back his grin. She gives him some side eye, despite her amusement. You think it does not suit me, she observes.
Well, I didn't say that.
I don't think so either, she admits. There are many things that don't suit me. Dean chuckles. He can imagine that. But my mother had a dream before I was born, Mila says. She saw beautiful wings and said I would have a free mind. When I grew and wanted to spend my days with horses more than cooking and sewing things, she didn't call me free. She called me stubborn. Her face begins to fall. Maybe too stubborn. Dean offers her a rueful, sympathetic look.
Yeah, I get it. My brother always said I was damn hard-headed.
He says.
Maybe we've got more in common than we thought, huh?
Mila's smile returns, however slightly. You have a brother? She asks.
Oh, yeah.
He's a lawyer, so he's more needed back home.
Dean replies,
damn.
He really does miss his bookish little brother. He explains to her about his family, his brother and mother who still live in Lawrence, and how he joined the army, in part to honor his father.
What happened to him? She asks.
He died in some cornfield near Sharpsburg, Maryland, fighting the Confederacy.
He replies, heaving a breath.
Confederacy?
She questions.
The South.
Dean explains.
See, most of our southern states thought they should be their own country, letting slaves plow their fields and mine their kids. I may have lived on a farm, but my father always paid his workers. He fought for the Union.
So you fought among yourselves over land that did not belong to you? Mila points out. Dean falls silent. After a while, he concedes her point with an incline of his head.
Fair enough,
he says, glancing over at her.
I think my dad thought the fighting would end with the war, but it never really ends, does it?
Her expression of curiosity fades, turning more solemn.
No, she agrees. I am sorry for your father.
Dean's a little surprised to hear that from her, but he nods his thanks. They continue to talk as the sun begins to set in the west. When it dips behind the canyon, they stop to make camp for the night, and he helps her catch a rabbit to roast on the fire they build together. That night, over the meal, she slowly opens up to him. He learns that she's an only child, though she has a sibling-like bond with her older cousin, Shota. She spends most of her days planting or harvesting their crops, depending on the season, as well as sewing, painting, helping the elders of her tribe with tasks, and helping her mother and aunt cook. When the rabbit is gone, she unbinds her long, thick hair and untangles it while she speaks. She explains that the Lakota are just one of many tribes. There are six other bands of Sioux who live in this region. Along with the Dakota and the Nakota, they are the seven council fires who have made the Great Plains their home for generations. She tells him about the way her tribe lives, caring for one another, giving the land back as much as they take, and letting it rest. The men hunt and protect the village from the outside, but the women protect the inside, their way of life. Most of all, Mila tells him she loves caring for the horses. She goes out and rides whenever she can duck out of her mother's watchful eye. Dean enjoys listening to her stories. He likes what he learns about her, but also, he just likes the sound of her voice. Smooth and steady, almost calming. He thinks she might like the sound of his, too, the way she smiled at him, laughed with him, glanced at him when she's thinking he's not looking. She still picks a spot as far away from him as she can to sleep, though. She keeps the fire pit in between them. He even catches sight of her knife, hidden in the hand she tucks underneath her cheek. Evidently, she doesn't fully trust him just yet. It annoys him at first, considering how many times he's saved her already, how much he's sacrificed just to get them this far. Until he remembers how they met. He remembers the disdain and anger in her brown eyes, then the mistrust and the fear hidden underneath. He thinks of every experience she's likely had so far with the U.S. military and anyone else who looks like him. Dean settles down on the ground and stares up at the innumerable stars in a raven sky. He's exhausted, but his thoughts don't let him rest for a while. At the very least, the way she looks at him now is softer than that first day. In the morning, Mila watches the strange man wake. He blinks and rubs his bleary eyes, yawning, groaning at the sun's brightness like a child. She hides her smile by bowing her head over the apple she's cutting with her knife. The orchards span wide across the forest, and soon he'll find two yellow-red apples beside his head. His brows raise at them, then he looks up at Mila sitting with her legs crossed behind the small fire pit. The wood there is just ash and blackened remains now, but it still carries the smell of burning.
Morning,
he greets.
She nods back at him and pretends not to watch when he sits up with a groan, stretching and bending his arms high behind his head. He removed his uniform jacket to sleep. It allows her to see every dip of male muscle that his plain white shirt clings to, even in the long sleeves. Her gaze furtively runs over the broad shoulders, the tapered waist, then back up to his half-bearded face, defined by a strong jaw and dark brows. The sun catches on his brown hair and teases the ends of it golden. She would never admit it, but he's not unpleasant to look at. Last night, she declined his offer to travel with her until she reaches her tribe safely, but he was insistent. Again, strange. So here she is, with him. Here they are. Dean turns to see the horses grazing nearby. Mato no longer has the saddle and bridle his men put on him. He looks rested and at ease. He even whinnies at Baby, tossing his head a little. She answers him and flicks her tail. They continue eating together. Dean smiles, then grabs an apple. He raises it to her in thanks before he takes a large bite. Its juices run down the corner of his mouth, and he wipes at it with the back of his hand. Mila can't help but be drawn to the sight. She tears her eyes away when he looks at her.
We have a long way to go. 3 days, if the weather is good.
She says, continuing to carve pieces of her apple to eat.
We will know we are close when we reach the river.
Dean nods in understanding. With a grunt, he gets to his feet and takes another bite out of his breakfast. She doesn't expect the way he approaches her with a hand outstretched. She looks up at it, then at his expectant face.
Come on, let's hit the road then.
He says. Mila considers his offer for another moment. He seems to be making this a habit. Amused, she wonders if this is just kindness or if the women of his people aren't allowed to stand without a man's help. She pockets her knife, swipes her braided hair over her shoulder, and slips her hand into his, allowing him to help her to her feet. When she gets there, he's closer than he should be. The breath gets trapped in her throat as she once again looks between his warm hand closed over her smaller one and his face. In the small space between them, there is a different kind of tension than before. Mila can't tell what the man is thinking when he looks at her like that, but she doesn't like it. And at the same time, she does. She takes back her hand and she goes to the horses. She firmly ignores how her heart gallops, even as she rubs at her chest like it's an ache that can be soothed. She doesn't hear Dean's unsteady breath, nor does she see the way his green eyes follow her.